Coming up on Tech News Today, why Linux will conquer gaming, Google targets PayPal, and why don't you love the PC more? All that and more coming up.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Tuesday, September 17th, 2013. Tech News Today is brought to you by Shutterstock.com. With over 28 million high-quality stock photos, illustrations, vectors, and video clips, Shutterstock helps you take your creative projects to the next level. For 25% off your new account, go to Shutterstock.com and use offer code TNT9. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Aya Zaktar.
I'm Jason Howell.
I feel like I'm not saying my R's today. I'm Tom Merritt, and that's them for the News Fuse. Put it in context for you right now. Wait. Valve co-founder Gabe Newell gave a keynote speech at LinuxCon touting Linux as the future of gaming. Newell pointed out that 198 games now run on Linux since the spring launch of Steam for Linux. He also extolled the speed at which development can happen in an open environment. And right at the end, he hinted that Valve's approach to hardware for Steam, as well as some news on mobile, will be coming next week. Steambox!
The 16-gigabyte model of the Nexus 4 sold out of the Google Play online store yesterday, and that's following last week when it sold out of the 8-gigabyte model following a $100 price drop. Now, The Verge says we have a source that says Google has no plans to restock either of these items and continue offering this phone. This, along with that mystery device that showed up in a Google promotional video recently, and then an SEC filing from Google, all point to a possible Nexus 5 in the near future.
Sarah, you're an Apple TV having cord cutter. You might not like this next story. Amazon just updated its instant video app for iOS, and it finally supports AirPlay video streaming. Now, in the past, the app's AirPlay functionality was limited to audio only. Amazon also says the updated app is faster, too.
Woohoo!
Apple's iOS 7 will become available Wednesday, September 18th. Older versions of hardware like the iPhone 3GS and the original iPad won't be able to take advantage, but Apple's not ignoring you folks in the App Store. If a user running an older version of iOS tries to download a version of an app that wouldn't work, the OS will ask the user if they would like to download the latest compatible version. The prompt was discovered by a Reddit user who tried to install Instagram on a second-gen iPod Touch.
Microsoft's Bing search engine is sporting a new logo, but it made some changes to actual search, too. Improved snapshot cards that try to guess what you want to know before you're finished typing it, or gives you a quick index of info, but it also pulls from Facebook and Twitter to see what your friends might be saying about a particular search term. The page zero results autofill, even as you search a query, now have little mini tiles with pictures and text. Other tweaks like poll position results now fill in answers for easy questions about things like the weather.
Google just bought the company Bump. Now, the Bump app allowed users to share files and contact info by tapping devices together without the need of NFC. Now, speaking of NFC, Google just updated its Google Wallet app to support any Android device running 2.3 and higher and does away with needing NFC support. The app will let users send money for free to other U.S.-based users via an email address, similar to PayPal.
Dell knows the way to your laptop love is through big battery life and cheap prices. The new $379 Haswell version of the Inspiron 11 3000 series of laptops lasts up to 8 hours on a single charge. It's also still light and thin at 3.15 pounds and 0.83 inches thick with an 11.6 inch touch enabled display. The Inspiron 11 3000 series goes on sale October 3rd.
Iranian citizens briefly had access to Twitter and Facebook, services that have been officially banned in the country since 2009. So what happened? One communications official called the whole episode an ISP technical failure, but others say this could be a result of pro-internet moderates like Iran's new president Hassan Rouhani pushing back against the wishes of more conservatives within the Iranian government. The communication official's response to the glitch was officially, "We will take action if there was a human flaw. We are probing it."
Internet.org, the organization begun by Facebook to make the internet accessible and affordable for everyone, released a white paper Tuesday detailing the changes that need to happen in spectrum usage to accommodate 1,000 times more web traffic as the 5 billion people currently not connected come online. The paper details technologies deliver and handle huge volumes of data generated by a billion plus users daily with names like air traffic control, hip hop, and WebP.
According to the Washington Post, the country of Brazil is planning to separate itself from the U.S.-centric internet due to reports of U.S. government surveillance. Now, Brazil would still allow its citizens to view and use U.S. services, but the country wants their data to be stored locally to prevent the NSA from spying. This is leading experts to voice concerns that the internet could be fractured should countries wall themselves off.
This episode of Tech News Today brought to you by Shutterstock.com. I use it all the time. Because I'm looking for a good image to go with a blog post or a podcast posting or something like that. And I want that perfect image. Or maybe I need some stock video. Maybe you need some stock video. Maybe you've got a little documentary or a little advertising video or a brochure that you're trying to make. Whatever you're doing, you can choose from over 28 million high-quality stock photos, illustrations, vectors, and video clips at Shutterstock.com. They get them from the pros. They get 10,000 or so images every day. And they review them for content and quality. So you know you're going to have good stuff to choose from. And they've got an amazing search engine. You can search by color palette if you've got a particular color temperature you're looking for. You can search by mood, gender, all kinds of things. Shareable light boxes make it easy to collaborate with folks. You just got to go check it out. They even have an award-winning iPad app and multilingual customer service. Oh, yeah, check that out. You don't even have to use a credit card if you want to try it out, though. Go to Shutterstock, sign up for a free account. You can start using that Lightbox. You can start sharing images. You can start collecting images and collaborating. And then when you get to the point where you're like, you know what, I need to buy this stuff, use the offer code TNT9, and new accounts will receive 25% off any package. That's Shutterstock.com for 25% off new accounts. Use offer code TNT9. And we thank Shutterstock for their support of Tech News Today. Couldn't do it without you, Shutterstock. Thank you. Joining us now to discuss the stories of the day, we invite you to pull up a seat. John P., co-host of GeekBeat.tv. I'm just going to bail on your last name unless you want to try to tell us how to pronounce it.
I'm not even sure I can pronounce it. It's just ridiculous.
Jason did a good job spelling it, though.
Yeah, he did. He got it just right. It's Pozazides. If you can ignore that first D, it's pretty much just the way it's spelled, although we owe that spelling to the immigration officers, believe it or not. When my dad came to this country, he could not speak any English. So he said, Pozazides. And they were like, what? We'll spell it like this. And there you go.
Well, there you go. Pozazides. All right. I'll just call you John P., if that's okay. Let's start off talking about Valve CEO Gabe Newell at LinuxCon, calling it the future of gaming. Linux, he means. He talked for more than 20 minutes about why Linux is the future of gaming. And he finished with a bit about the living room. He was saying, why is it that video games in the living room are disconnected from other gaming experiences? Let's listen to about a minute of how he finished this up.
Well, that you don't think of touch input or game controllers or living rooms as being things which require a completely different way for users to interact or acquire assets or developers to program or distribute to those targets. Obviously, if that's the direction that you're going in, Linux is the base, is the most obvious basis for that, and none of the proprietary closed platforms are going to be able to provide that kind of grand unification between mobile, the living room, and the desktop. Actually, next week we're going to be rolling out more information about how we get there and what are the hardware opportunities that we see for bringing Linux into the living room, and potentially pointing further down the road to how we can get it even more unified with in mobile.
Well, wait a minute, right there. He slips in mobile at the end, John. So it sounds like we're going to get some Steambox details at the very least, and maybe some sort of Steam for phones or tablets.
You know, it'd be nice. The whole concept of people coming out and telling us that their new OS or their new tablet or their new whatever is going to take over the world it's a beautiful dream. It's Linux is a wonderful operating system. It's free, as he pointed out. It would be great to see it get more traction, but I'm not sure I buy into the initial fundamental statement that it's going to take over gaming. And then, you know, but if we just give him that, and then we think about how mobile fits in, I know that personally, I only play games on my iPad. And I would love to be able to see some integration between things like a PS3, an iPad, a Linux machine, a Windows machine, whatever. It would be great, but it seems like that would require a whole different kind of gaming ecosystem than currently exists. I don't know about you guys. I would love to see universal platform integration. I just don't believe it's going to happen.
You know, there's already the ability to stream Steam games onto something like the NVIDIA Shield. So the idea that Steam would go mobile maybe is more of a streaming idea as opposed to having the games be supported on a mobile device or a Linux version on mobile. And I don't know. I mean, it seems like Newell's had a big issue with Microsoft since Microsoft introduced the whole store concept and Windows 8 changes. The idea that you wouldn't go through Valve's Steam to get games, that seems to be freaking him out. Because the weird thing he says in that clip, he says, nobody's really putting it together. Microsoft is putting it together. Their mobile, Xbox, and Windows 8 is built into, at least part of Windows 8 is built into Xbox. They might be able to pull off something that's making Newell freak out.
Well, it definitely is making him freak out, right? I mean, he is mad about Windows 8 and the App Store. And I guess what he's saying they're not pulling together is the ability to say, I am playing on my Mac laptop, and now I sit down in front of my Xbox, and suddenly it's an entirely different ecosystem. But you bring up a good point, Ayaz. If you're entirely within the Microsoft ecosystem and you're playing on Windows 8 and you're playing on the Windows phone, Microsoft's pitching the idea that you can continue playing your game and you're not in an entirely different ecosystem. So it's kind of open versus proprietary here.
And also, Sony's trying the same thing, right? With remote play on PS3s and PS Vitas, and then you have this. Obviously, it's doing the same kind of thing. You're streaming your gaming to another system. So, again, another company trying it is Sony. So, I just find this to be like a false argument. If Valve can actually put together hardware and actually good partnerships where their stuff is available everywhere, and you could pick up and move from system to system, that'd be pretty interesting. I want to see if they can do it.
If anybody could do it, it's Steam. Because what they're saying is, and I think this is where I disagree with you about it being a false argument, is right now you can play your Steam games on a Mac, you can play your Steam games on Windows, and now you can play your Steam games on Linux. Our sales are up 76%, whereas PCs are declining. We'll talk about a little bit about that later. And what we're finding out is that if we make a box that you can put in your living room, now you could just be playing everywhere. And if we point down the road to mobile, maybe you could stream those Steam games, and Steam is the one place where you could have all the best games available and your platform wouldn't matter anymore. And what Microsoft and Sony are all saying is, well, you're still going to be on our platform across all of this stuff. We're not going to allow you to go cross-platform with our games yet. So I think that's where the battle is going to take place. Be interesting to watch. Another battle that's taking place is micropayments or mobile payments or wireless payments. And Google is changing Google Wallet.
Yeah, the Google Wallet app for Android devices will now be available on all Android devices running version 2.3 and higher in the U.S. rather than just those handful of devices that support NFC technology, which has always made it difficult to talk about NFC as really much more than anything that's just working for a few people. So Verizon, AT&T, and T-Mobile subscribers can now download the app, although they still can't use it to make payments with phones through NFC technology in stores because they're all backers behind the mobile payment app, which is called, what the heck is that called? For some reason, I'm totally at the ISIS mobile payment app. Sorry, I had a Tuesday moment there, which also relies on NFC. But with the new app, you can send money for free to anybody else in the U.S. with your email. This sounds familiar. It works a lot like a PayPal or a Venmo. By using your Google Wallet balance, or you can set it up to use a credit card or a bank card or money transfers type of a thing. If you use certain credit cards, there'll be a fee. If you use peer-to-peer pay, you also get early access to the similar money transfer product that's being rolled out in Gmail that we've talked about in the past. So it's a little bit of a, hey, if you're on board with this, then you'll get this nice feature in Gmail as well. There's no iOS version yet, but those say, well, it's probably on its way. Google Wallet also allows anybody to use a loyalty card to the wallet. So you scan your barcode or enter in a card number. Then you use that loyalty card by scanning it at a checkout at stores. But they still have to have the right scanner. And loyalty card redemption was previously limited to just NFC devices and just NFC-equipped retailers. So it seems like Google is saying, listen, the NFC thing is just hard for people to get their heads around because it's really, really limiting. Let's offer more features. But John, do you feel like this is moving away from what Google wanted NFC to be? Because it's kind of just adding features that we've grown to know a PayPal, let's say, for already providing.
I think the problem is that, you know, we all live in this kind of online space. And I don't know about you guys, but I actually do more shopping online than I do in the real world. However, the reality is there is no payment system that is going to be really successful unless you can drive it into the retail market and get retailers to adopt it. The problem there is, think about all those point of sale terminals that are in existence. How do you convert them into something that could just very seamlessly, very easily take some sort of mobile payment? I think whether it's NFC or whether it's any other competing technology, right now what's easy about credit cards is there's a little box. You slip your little credit card through. It's integrated into the system. It's all automatic. It's supported universally everywhere. You can even use a credit card in some vending machines. It doesn't really matter if they want to tell us that NFC is not the right answer. We've got to use this other kind of thing. They can go back and forth with 15 different products, as far as I'm concerned, until they get retailers like Target and Walmart and Macy's and gas stations and grocery stores to stick some kind of device in there that I can use no matter how I use it. It's just not going to matter. And how is that going to happen? I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's what everybody's trying to crack. And I think that's what you're seeing Google do here, is trying to take a step towards that direction. You can scan any loyalty card in. You can use a lot more places to pay with Google Wallet now that we don't require NFC. And I think that is a step backward for NFC. I've never been a big fan of it, never been a big believer of it. And this, to me, shows that, well, that's not necessarily going to be the solution. Maybe it'll make a comeback. I don't know. But to me, this is bad news for near-field communication as a payment technology.
If you think also about this loyalty card issue, first of all, you have to have a different loyalty card for every place that you shop. Secondly, where's the security in that? Am I going to have to keep up with every one of these things? I mean, what if I drop my loyalty card or leave it at home? Or it has to be one universal thing that we can just do everywhere. They need to team up with Visa or MasterCard and come up with something, you know, where they put these NFC devices on the credit cards, or, you know, something that we can use to just tap and go. I don't know.
Yeah, it's just hard for me to understand how anything like NFC really has a chance of taking off when we can do the whole thing via, I mean, if you've got a bank account anyway. So the whole idea with NFC is, oh, it's easy. Your phone just kind of becomes your wallet. But if that's all going back and forth in the background, I can hook up a routing number and say, hey, I want to send this amount of money to John P. And there's a transaction involved. That's just easier anyway. I don't have to think about where I am physically. So I don't see how we can trump that experience.
Why can't we just skip the whole NFC thing, skip the credit card thing, and move right to biometrics? Why can't you use my retina for payment? Because there's no difference between tying in something I am to my banking account versus something I have to my banking account.
Although, be careful, because if you want to change your password, then you have to gouge out your eyes. So it's always a concern there. Maybe the solution is fist bumping. IaaS, Google's bought Bump.
Yeah, they bought Bump. Now, according to All Things D's sources, the deal was for at least $30 million. Perhaps somewhere as much as $60 million. TechCrunch says the deal could be something around $35 million. That obviously wasn't disclosed. They've got their sources. Now, if you've ever used a Bump app, it's pretty simple. You can transfer files, contact info, all kinds of things just by taking two devices and like physically bumping them together. You don't have to like smack them or anything, but it kind of works that way. It also expanded to desktops. So if you wanted to have data from your desktop, you would actually take your phone and you tap the space bar on Bump's website, and then you'd actually have data transfer. It actually was kind of a neat little gimmick. There's also an app called Flock for photo sharing. They're also by Bump. Now, Bump CEO David Lieb wrote that Bump and Flock will continue to work as always have for now. So it's going to work for now. So no idea when that's going to either get consumed by Google. John, where do you see Bump's technology? Do you see it having a future in Google Wallet, or do you see it being somewhere else?
I love Bump. I don't know about you guys. When it first came out, I thought it was genius. I like to use it for like sharing contact details and things like that. The problem is nobody wants to bump with me. I don't know why.
Nobody wants to bump with you.
Where could it be used? I mean, this is brilliant. It could be used anywhere. Imagine, for example, if you talk about, let's say, having credit card payment options and maybe NFC doesn't work that great. Okay. How about if I go up to a Coke machine and there's a special little pad like right on the front of the Coke machine? I can put my phone in my hand and punch this little pad and bingo, it bumps the money right out of my account and I get my Coke. That would be awesome. You got to admit. I just don't know if people, all I know is I couldn't get people to bump phones with me. That's all I know.
I mean, the whole thing with Google buying Bump is, we all sort of laugh about the idea of like, you have to like have some sort of a collision between phones. But Bump is, it's really good for, Bump even has a standalone business card app. It's got Bump Pay. There's a really easy way, whether you're on a desktop or a mobile device, you know, to just like send somebody a file. It's really, I think, sort of the future of instant messaging. That's where I would see Google integrating something like Bump, because there's a little less focus, besides the fact that it's called Bump, a little less focus on actually that whole like, let's bump devices and share information. It's just a very easy way for me to say, hey, Tom, I need to get something to you. Oh, we'll use Bump. That's the easiest protocol, because it's actually a technology that works really well.
I used Bump for the first time in New York City with Eric Van Skyhawk. He introduced me to it, and I think I haven't used it since. So I'm part of the problem, John. I'm one of those people. It's like, I used to have that app. I don't know. I never ran into the situation where I needed to have it. It's fun to have. Yeah.
You know, so think about it this way. Okay, I'm a businessman. I'm wearing my $2,000 suit. You know, I walk up to a big important meeting and I see there's a CEO of this company sitting there, and we shake hands and we pull out our phones and tap them together to transfer our business cards. It's not going to happen. I'm telling you, it's just not going to happen. Although I think it'd be great and you wouldn't have to keep up with all this stuff, but people just feel silly and or they just don't want to touch each other, or I don't know what the deal is.
Well, you could imagine the Google Plus integration, if you could just bump people to add them to circles and things like that. I'd imagine this stuff, this technology, just the easier file sharing and the contact information sharing, that might be the real hook about this. They might kind of distance themselves away. Google might distance themselves away from the actual physical act of it, but the way this sharing goes on. Google already does a lot of the sync stuff, though. So that's what's kind of confusing to me. So if you have like Google Maps on your desktop, if you go to the Google Maps app and you're signed in, you'll have all that data there anyway. So I don't really see the need for a single user using it. But if you have multiple people trying to share, it might be the way to go. Maybe like Bump and Hangouts or something. I have no idea how that's going to work.
You know, you also, we're always searching for like the one, the holy grail of applications. And we just want this one universal fit for everybody. But that's not very realistic. I mean, in my garage at home, I've got a lot of different tools. I got hammers and screwdrivers and wrenches. I mean, why can't we just use Bump and NFC and biometrics and other stuff? I mean, the one real challenge there, if you have a mobile device, is kind of leaving everything running so that it's searching for everything. It kills your battery life.
If
we had the option, you know.
Battery vampires. Got to watch out for them. Meanwhile, we might want to send some flowers to our PCs, because apparently our love is fading for them, Sarah.
Yeah, so there's a American Customer Satisfaction Index's Household Appliance and Electronics Report 2013.
Easy for you to say.
Yeah. It's actually pretty interesting. It measured the satisfaction levels of PCs, people who own them. And what's interesting about it is this is not just another, like, are tablets better than PCs? Tablets are included into what constitutes a personal computer. They interviewed 2,700 consumers. So this is people who have desktops and laptops and tablets. On a 100-point scale, the consumers were asked to say, well, how happy are you with the variety of your devices? Tablets grabbed a score of 81. Laptops and desktops, 79 points each. PC devices in general are on the decline, about 1.3% in satisfaction from last year. And the Axie, that's the acronym for the foundation, founder and chairman, Claes Fornell said, research shows that consumers have high expectations. Companies are under a good deal of pressure to keep up with demand for faster, more powerful devices that offer new and improved features. What, if you sort of put this in a timely perspective, what company does that sound exactly like? I thought immediately to Apple. Yeah, Apple comes out with new devices last week and everyone says, not innovative enough. Stock price is kind of tanking. People wonder, oh, you know, is it curtains for Apple? But we see this as such a cyclical thing with a variety of companies. And I wonder at this point, well, is innovation in PCs in general, and that includes tablets, which is relatively new, just winding down in general? And if so, what's next that get people excited again? John, any insight here?
Well, I'm the wrong guy to ask for insight, but I'll tell you what I'm wondering about. You know, we're kind of on the verge of the intelligent everything. You look at having devices like these Arduinos. What do they cost? $20 for a little computer in your pocket? We are very close to the day where you can have a computer for, let's say, $1 on a chip. And at that point, everything becomes smart. Your fridge, your washing machine, your front door, everything is smart. And so it seems like we're kind of caught in this little limbo where we want to control more stuff and we want to see things rapidly evolve. And we will want to have a central control mechanism, which I think is going to be our PC, whether it's a really powerful tablet, a tablet 3 or 4 years from now that has at least as much power as our current, you know, high-end laptops, or whether it's a desktop or a laptop that we use centrally in our home. I think that the software has to catch up. We need software that's capable of looking at hundreds of devices and allowing them all to talk to one another and share information with each other, and then be simply controlled by, like, my mother, you know. And so right now, frankly, my laptop is pretty boring. I mean, I do Skype on it. I web surf on it, check email on it, maybe process some photos. But there's nothing really sexy about it anymore. We need more intelligence out there that we can control with it to bring the excitement back to it. That's my theory, at least.
Well, I think that's a good theory. When you look at this full study, though, they also have household appliances. The customer satisfaction has declined 1.2% for household appliances. And I don't think we all feel our household appliances are all that sexy. But it's still, overall, an 80 score, which is just one above what the PC score is. And I think, John, you're totally right. PCs are becoming a commodity like household appliances.
Well, you know, maybe the reason why we're not so satisfied with our appliances anymore is because they're so stupid. I mean, you're so spoiled with all of our other smart devices. Heck, our cars are smart. Our phones are smart. My fridge is not particularly smart. Why can't it just, you know, do things for me? Why can't my lights just turn themselves on and off when I walk in out of the room, or if nobody's been in there for a while, just turn themselves off? Why can't they tell me how much power they're using? I mean, I am not happy with any of my devices because I want more out of them than they're giving me. I don't know.
Meanwhile, at the bottom of this list, internet service providers with a score of 65. Compare that to your 79 from personal computers. Let's talk about the French. They're trying to help you take hold of your data. Part of being satisfied with your computer is that it does the things you want it to do. The quantified self-movement, basically that's just the idea that you've got a Fitbit tracking you and you're checking in on Foursquare, like basically collecting data about yourself, is cool but creepy because third parties hold that data. Fitbit holds all your data on your health in that situation for instruments. Benjamin Andre and Frank Rousseau want to give you control. They've come up with an open source platform called Cozy That's an online address book, calendar, note-taking application, task manager, photo gallery, and email backup system that you can run on your own personal server. And they're bundling that with something called KU, which will analyze your Cozy data. The number of tasks you create and complete each day, the amount of email you receive, even track your mood, and can even track outside systems. They're hoping for people to build plugins for things like Fitbit so that that information can be gleaned and put into KU. And you can run all this on a Raspberry Pi. Those cheap servers that John was just talking about. You can run this on one of those cheap little servers. Now, they say they'll host Cozy for you right now, but that sort of undermines the point of this, the advantage being that you can then move it onto your own server when you're ready. So if you have them host Cozy, they're not going to lock you in. That's your data and you get to take it when you leave. They're working with European telcos to offer Cozy cloud appliances for people who aren't geeks. They could just buy this appliance when they sign up for their ISP, plug it in, and it starts working. There's even, as a side note, a NextWeb article today about how to make money off your data. So, you know, potentially this could be a money-making venture for you to collect data on yourself and then sell it. But this all sounds a little out there, though, doesn't it, John? What do you think it would take to get people to do this more often?
I think it would take not doing this to get people to do this. You know, the challenge is that you need adoption from the general public if you're going to have a successful product. It's flat out, not just the early adopters like all of us geeks. And we love it when people build things just for us, but they just don't make money off of it when they do. And frankly, my mother, my best friend, I mean, I just don't know anybody who's going to be able to set something up and run their own server. No matter how easy it is, you've got to keep a machine on all the time. You got to make sure it's backed up. What if you lose your data? Oh, my God. Then you're pissed off. Then you talk about it. You tweet about it and everything else. I mean, there's just too many things wrong with the picture of doing it yourself. Should there be an option for those of us who want to? Absolutely. But you have to provide a hosted, managed application environment in order to get mainstream adoption. And that's what you have with Fitbit and all the others. I mean, I don't like it, but the world does.
Yeah, looking at this idea of running your own server, I have a couple of machines that I keep on all the time for that purpose. Microsoft had Windows Home Server. There are attempts to make this a mass marketed product, but it's generally pretty difficult to explain to the public what it does, because it's this idea of saying, okay, you're going to run your own cloud. As John is mentioning, there's upkeep, there's maintenance, there's what about your upload speed? That's going to determine things that are going on all the time, because as opposed to Google or Microsoft or wherever else you're putting your files in the cloud, they have faster connections than you're probably going to have at home. So there's a lot of other concerns. If it can be as simple as an appliance, you buy something, you plug it in, attach a hard drive, something like a Pogo plug or something like any of these number of like Tonito plug. If it's
a Slingbox is a server, a TiVo is a server.
Exactly. So if it's like that, where it's kind of hidden, where you're not even thinking about it, that might work for people. Like, I don't think a lot of people don't realize that TiVo is built on Linux. If people said, oh, it's on Linux, people would not understand that. They don't want to know that. They want the user interface to be easy. So if it's built like an appliance, maybe it'll work. But I would keep the word server away from it.
Yeah, I think that's what starts to make it sound scary, at least to a lot of people. Maybe not to us, but yeah, that's a good point.
What happens when you have like 15 of these things in your house? I mean, you've got TiVo, you've got Slingbox, you've got Plex, you've got connected data, the Drobo thing. You just, nobody has that kind of bandwidth.
Well, that sounds like a Victorian era person saying, what happens when you plug all of these light bulbs into the light? Nobody can generate. I think the bandwidth will eventually get there. It may not be there right now. And I think that's a fair point. But I do feel like we always worry about bandwidth, and then the bandwidth always gets bigger and we always find more uses for it. And that's just going to be the way the world continues to move forward. We used to think like, how could you store videos on your hard drives? And now it's nothing. You know, we do it all the time. Speaking of videos, let's talk about the Sony Smart Stick bringing Google TV into one of those little dongle things.
Yeah, so it's the Sony Bravia Smart Stick. It's coming. The device was leaked last week, but Sony's confirmed with Variety that it's coming out this week. What it does, it runs a Google TV version of Android, has lots of apps like Netflix, Amazon, YouTube, and the Chrome browser. Other apps that are downloadable from the Google Play Store. It also allows you a user to surf the web while watching a video in a little sub window. So if you wanted to have a little picture-in-picture action, you could. And the Smart Stick can be connected to a cable or satellite box because it has an HDMI in. So it's kind of like the Xbox One. It can control the cable box by attaching an IR blaster. So, yes, that technology is still in there. The remote has a microphone for voice control and a touchpad. But here's the big news. It's $150, and it'll only work with Sony's 2013 Bravia TV line. John, Variety says this thing can't compete with the Chromecast. Are they even competitors? I mean, who's this device for?
I'm going to tell you guys a story that I've never told anybody before.
Oh, boy.
Ooh, juicy.
A little while back, Sony came out with this new box that was for plugging in your hardware. It would compete with stuff like an Apple TV, for example. They sent us one for review on GeekBeat. I took it home, plugged it in. It was the worst thing ever. I mean, it was wretched. And I sent them back a very nice email explaining why we wouldn't do a review on it, because it was terrible. They required you, for example, to create a Sony account login before you could even use this device. And it went downhill from there. So just from the press release, I mean, even if it sounded perfect, I have a lot of doubt about the delivery of how that product would work. But then when you say it will only work with, and you limit it to a single product line and a current model year or later, my question is, why'd they even build it? Seriously, if I was the executive who was over the branch of people developing that product, I'd fire them all.
Is it really only working on Bravia? I know it's MHL, so you have to have an MHL TV, but...
That's what Variety says. The quote from Variety says, this is a quote, it works only with Sony's 2013 Bravia television line. So that's why that's what Variety's reporting anyway.
I'm looking at that line and I still don't believe it.
That sounds crazy.
Like, it's one thing to be like, okay, this is a competitor to the Roku stick because it only works in MHL and it's going to be able to control your TV and it does have an IR blaster and it's going to be more expensive than the Chromecast because it's full Google TV, where the Chromecast isn't full Google TV. So you can browse the web on it and do all the things that a Google TV can. That all makes sense to me. I still don't have great hopes that it's going to succeed. But saying it only works with the 2013 Bravia line, that's just stupid. Like, why would you do that?
It's unprecedented, though. Sony has, I'm telling you, they have done, this is a replay of what they have done in the past, and it was a miserable, wretched failure. And I guess they have so much money that what's it hurt to lose? What do you think it cost them to get this product to market? 10 mil? I don't know.
And if it's limited to that one TV line, why not just integrate that functionality into the TV in the first place? It's just an accessory for this one line of TVs. It seems strange.
Well, that I could make an argument for that, which is, now your TV is upgradable. When new hardware comes out, you don't have to replace the old TV. You can just replace the dongle.
Okay, actually, people were quite happy. Good point. People were happy when Samsung introduced that evolution kit thing where you do have the brains that would change out. So maybe it's not as crazy, but the idea that it's limited to... Because it seems like a device, like a set-top box, because it's just in a different form factor. It seems like it should be able to be on any device. So it seems a little strange to limit it.
Why wouldn't... I mean,
There's almost nothing worse than a device called the Smart Stick. Can we just talk about how just gross that sounds? I hate it. I hate saying it. I hate reading it.
You got Smart Watch, Smart Stick.
What's it called?
Smart Stick.
Ugh. Okay.
Yeah. And it's limiting. This is a stupid product.
Don't buy, I think is what we're all saying. Let's move on to the randomizer. Did a straw poll with our live audience today. Had three randomizers, all three gleaned from our subreddit at technewstoday.reddit.com. The first one from SP Sheridan, the last one actually, at 19% of the vote, Virgin Mobile YouTube channel using technology to change the ad when you blink by using your camera. Number two, this one came from Inge Aning, 26% of the vote, Volvo letting a hamster steer one of its trucks. They were using a carrot to have the hamster move the wheel. It wasn't exactly like the hamster. I mean, the hamster could look out the window. And number one, though, the microbial battery that can turn wastewater into electricity. Captain Kipper submitted this one and got 55% of the vote. This is future. This is Back to the Future made real. The ability to just throw the garbage into your Mr. Generator or whatever it was called.
Mr. Fusion.
Yes, thank you. And get power out of it. Granted, it's not quite there yet, but microbial fuel cells. I'm excited.
I like the idea that if your phone is dead, you're like, give me some garbage now. There you go. My phone's back.
You got any garbage? My phone died.
I mean, that's perfect because my car is always filled with garbage. So
there you go.
There you go.
Not anymore. It'll be burned up in your microbial fuel cell. Setup is very efficient. The problem is that you have to use silver for the anode, so it's not cost effective yet. But they're getting there. It's getting closer. Cool stuff. Let's move on to the calendar.
Wayne Green, who's the co-founder of Byte, as in Byte Magazine, has died at 91 years old. Looking forward to tomorrow, we've got Oracle earnings tomorrow, the 18th. Also, GigaOm Structure kicks off in Europe. It's taking place in London. Starts tomorrow, runs through Thursday, the 19th. AT&T and T-Mobile have begun selling the Samsung Galaxy Gear. Pre-orders start this week. And Nokia is holding a special event on October 22nd. 6-inch Lumia 1520 seems likely.
Intriguing.
Intriguing also, indeed.
Incoming.
Incoming message.
I got a message from Derek. It says, hey, TNT crew, in episode 837, you discussed passwords and keyboards. If keyboards are the enduring input device, can't we at least start using faster layouts than QWERTY? QWERTY was designed to slow typing down because of typewriter mechanics. Other layouts would be better in the electronic keyboard era. Also, the imminent demise of passwords brings the first compelling reason for having a smartwatch. An NFC chip in the watch can serve as the second factor of dongle, at least until everyone adopts fingerprint or retina scanners. Interesting points.
Yeah, I still go with that. That second factor being a body part scares me now. Ever since, I know that the severed finger can't be used on the Authentic thing with the iPhone, but you also can't change your fingerprints. So think about it. That is it for this episode of Tech News Today. John P., thank you so much. It was great having you on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Geekbeat.tv is the place if you want more, John. There's lots of good stuff to be had there. You and Kelly do an awesome job. You got anything special coming up you want to tell folks about?
Let's see. Nothing really that I can leak yet about stuff coming out on the show, but Callie and I are going on vacation in a couple of weeks with my family. We're going to Hawaii, so that'll be fun. And then we're going to be in London next month. We're doing a keynote there. Then we're going to be in Boston the following. So we got a lot of fun stuff coming up.
Busy days. Keep up with them at geekbeat.tv. You can also submit things in our subreddit, technewstoday.reddit.com, if you want to have an effect on what we cover every day. We look at that. We look at how many votes people are putting in there, too. So get in there and vote on the stories that are submitted. You can submit some as well, technewstoday.reddit.com. You can find us on the web at twit.tv/TNT. Email us, tnt@twit.tv, and give us a call. Leave us a voicemail, 260-TNT-SHOW. Our old pal, Rafe Needleman, joins us tomorrow. We'll see you then.